Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
Right now, very pleased to welcome into Locked On Bulls first time guest. He's a guy that I've had the pleasure of getting to know and talking a lot of Bulls basketball with over my first year at NBC. He is Michael Walton, a writer and web producer over there at NBC Sports Chicago, also editor-in-chief of the great Bulls blog, Bulls Confidential. You can follow Bulls Confidential on Twitter at Bulls Conf. That's BullsConf, and follow Michael on Twitter at Zen Master Mike. Michael, welcome to the pod, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Matt. I really appreciate it. I've told you plenty of times that Locked On Bulls, one of my favorite podcasts, the Locked On Network in general is awesome. And just while I'm here, might as well give a quick shout out to Adam Mares. I'm a huge fan of Locked On Nuggets as well. So love everything you guys do, and I'm glad you would have me on, Matt.
Oh, of course, man. We appreciate it. We appreciate the kind words. Definitely. If there are any crossover Bulls Nuggets out there, check that out for sure. But yeah, the Locked On Network overall does great work. All right. So, Michael, let's basically just go down the line of your take on the moves that the Bulls have made starting Sunday evening with free agency. The first signing they made, the grit and grind, tough-minded veteran, it's going to come in, give him some bench minutes as a front court depth guy, and clearly a member of the leadership committee, Thaddeus Young. What's your take on the Bulls adding Thad?
Yeah, so Thaddeus Young, I think I had the same reaction as most Bulls fans, which was a little bit of a what when you see the contract, because it's 3 years, $41 million. It's a little bit of a okay, because, you know, I remember Thad Young. I'm familiar with his work. Member of the 2008 All Rookie Team, Thad Young.
Right. So yeah. He's been around a while.
Yeah. I was a little confused, but that move I'm okay with, just because, as you said, Thad Young is going to be a good locker room guy, which Kendall Gill made me laugh, which is, you know, the Bulls have had a lot of good locker rooms over the years, good locker room guys, excuse me. So let's hope he can actually contribute. But in all seriousness, I like the Thad Young signing. Kendall Gill made this comment that the Thad Young signing to him signifies that Lauri Markkanen is going to get a lot more minutes playing the small ball center position. And I would honestly agree with that, just because Thad Young isn't really going to stretch the floor. For his career, he's an okay three-point shooter. He is a little bit better from the corners, which is going to be a big deal in Chicago, where we can sort of stick him on the weak side. But I think the biggest thing for Thad is from the power forward position, he's actually a pretty good decision maker. Doesn't really turn the ball over a lot, and while he's not going to rack up a high number of assists, I just think the Bulls can use anyone who's a good decision maker. So I was happy with the Thad Young signing. I think we suffered from a little bit of an overpay, which, you know, to get the solid role players, I think that's just the reality the Bulls live in right now. But I'm okay with it. I think you have a lot of Bulls fans, Matt, upset, as you know, that Taj Gibson wasn't on his way to Chicago. But right. I think with Taj, you know, with Taj, you're signing a center, basically. With Thad, there's a little bit more mobility there, and I think he can actually grab the ball off of the defensive glass and push in transition, which is something I think they want to emphasize this year. So I'm a big fan of the Thad signing.
And unlike Taj, no offense to him, you know, we all love Taj here in Chicago, but I mean, Thad is much of a versatile kind of player. You know, he can play the three and the four. Whereas Taj is game rookie way back when. He's got a mid-range jumper, but that, you know, on the three-point line, but he can knock down an open shot. I think like career, he's around like 32, 32.5% from behind the three-point line. So to me, that was the other nice element. Like, Thad Young, underrated defensive player. He's not a great rim protector, but he's got a lot of steals for a guy who plays his positions. He's good on help defense, which is something the Bulls were atrocious at last season. But on the offensive end, more versatility and another shooter. And let's be honest, this is a team that, you know, for all of the crap that the fan base gives them about living in the past and not adapting to the modern, and saying that they want to add more three-point shooting but never actually doing it, Thad Young is not going to be one of their most lethal threats behind the three-point line, but he's another guy who can just knock down a three when he's open, which to me, team that was basically bottom of the barrel in the league last year at three-point shooting when it comes to makes and attempts, that's good news.
Absolutely, that's going to be good news. And Thad Young, I think, obviously, Bulls fans, you know, they look at Thad Young scoring for his career 13 points a game, and it's a little tough to understand, again, what's the value in a player like that. But that's why I want to give a quick shout-out to Stephen Noe as well over at The Athletic. He did an excellent piece on Thaddeus Young that people should check out about sort of what he brings to the table aside from traditional counting stats. And something Mark Strotman of NBC Sports Chicago mentioned a lot is Thad Young's defense. For his career, he averages a steal and a half per game, I believe. And for the advanced stats nerds out there, if you go over to Clean the Glass or Basketball Reference, his steal percentage for his career has been pretty much around 2% every year, which is in the like 95th, 96th percentile, I think. So basically, Thad Young is going to be active with his hands on the defensive end. And he's one of those guys where you can switch onto a point guard for a small, you know, stretch of time to actually slow down an offense. So I think Thaddeus Young gives us a little bit of capability to switch on defense as well, which is going to be a big deal when you want to play small ball and go fast to where you can slow down the opponent's offense and really short circuit some pick and roll attacks. So I like Thaddeus Young mostly because he's a quick big that, like I said, on pick and roll D, I trust that to be there, as you said, as a help defender as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I plugged that same article by Noe on yesterday's podcast. And in one of the videos in that column, you know, he shows you not only is Thaddeus Young a guy who can hit an open shot and, you know, play in transition, play multiple positions, but for a guy his size, he's got some strength too. So when Jim Boylan does want to slow things down, because we saw him feed a lot of balls to Rolo in the post this past season, Thad Young can also do some damage as a post scorer, which we don't really know a whole lot about the people on our roster who can do that right now. Obviously, Bulls fans would like to see Wendell, you know, grow some confidence and efficiency in his game working from the block, Lauri Markkanen as well. But for a guy his size, Thad Young's got some strength, and he can get some buckets around the rim as well.
Exactly. And I think the one thing with Thad Young that, you know, was concerning for me where I wasn't crazy about the signing initially speaking here was that that's not an amazing defensive rebounder. But again, right, when you get Thaddeus Young, I think the thing Jim Boylan's thinking with that is I'm not as much worried about his rebounding because I want him switching out on guys. I want him on the perimeter. I want him, like you said, covering up mistakes on the weak side. So I think Thad's only going to be playing in lineups where, like I said, he's either going to be next to Carter, Gafford, or Markkanen. So all in all, I think it was a great fit. And when you look at the market, outside of Taj, I'm not sure who fans can be really, you know, very upset over the Bulls not signing as far as the backup big goes.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't as deep of a free agent class at those positions than, you know, say, a lot of the true wings that were out there, and then certainly all of the backcourt free agents. So I think as far as the options that were on the table for the Bulls, yeah, it's a bit of an overpay for a guy you're going to bring in, you know, as a bench player. But I still think of all of their options, it was a pretty good one, considering what he's going to bring. All right, so let's move on to Thomas Satoransky now. Our guy Shinowski actually had Satoransky at the top of his wish list board on our free agency special Sunday night and said it wasn't really a very likely option considering most believed that Washington was going to do what they could to keep him and that he would probably cost more than the Bulls had to offer or were willing to offer. Instead, we hear that the Bulls and Wizards agreed to a sign and trade deal. Satoransky coming in on a 3-year deal like Thaddeus Young, 3 years, $30 million. Now, compared to some of the other, again, you know, some of the other people in that class of maybe not top tier, but second tier, third tier point guard options that were out in free agency to be had this summer. I think getting Satoransky, considering what he's going to provide for this Bulls roster in a supporting role as most likely the starting point guard at 3 years, 30 was a great deal. What about you?
Yeah. So Thomas Satoransky is where I really get excited to talk about the Bulls free agency. I do think Thaddeus Young is going to help a lot with shoring up the defense, which a lot of the things Thad Young, I think, aren't going to show up as apparently to Bulls fans. You know, you're going to have to read between the lines to see what Thad really brings. With Thomas Satoransky, I think he's going to become a fan favorite very quickly because it's just going to be easy to see what he brings to the Bulls. I love the signing because, first and foremost, I think Satoransky is a starting point guard. In Washington, I've always thought he should start, obviously not over John Wall, but I just thought they should have went with a three-guard lineup because the first thing I love about Satoransky is his size. 6'7" and a legit 6'7". I think through his career, Basketball Reference has, he's played at least like 30% or so of his minutes at the small forward position over his career. He's even played a little bit of power forward, which we wouldn't be doing that. But my point is bringing up Satoransky's size is he's versatile. You can sort of slide him around the lineup. The Bulls could pretty much play Satoransky with anyone else they have on the roster. And next year, I'm really looking forward to, it's something I wrote about in the article for Bulls Confidential, is I hope they use a lot of Thomas Satoransky, Kobe White lineups, because I think those lineups are really going to be able to space the floor and then push the ball in transition. You could even go very, very small and play Zach LaVine at the three. Obviously, there are going to be large stretches of the game where you're not really worried about playing lockdown defense anyway. So I think Satoransky really helps you open up that offense. And just to give Mark Stroman a quick shout-out, because he's really great on Twitter, just putting out a lot of stats and information. Yeah, literally the best. For his career, I believe he had Thomas Satoransky at 40% on catch-and-shoot threes. And as we all know, Chris Dunn, not a three-point specialist in any capacity, but I believe he's at 29% on catch and shoot threes. So even something as small as that, like I said, just having Satoransky in one corner and Kobe White in another with Zach LaVine running a pick and roll, it's going to look like a completely different team next year on offense. And I'm very excited about it. So Satoransky's biggest thing for me is I think he's going to allow Zach LaVine to be the best version of himself because, again, he's going to have more space to work with than he's ever had before.
I couldn't agree more, man, and that's why I love the Satoransky signing. He's going to be a guy who's going to maximize not only his own efficiency, being a very efficient shooter when he does shoot the ball, but first and foremost, being a guy who can be efficient on a low usage percent on a starting five where you need to get Zach LaVine his moments as a ball handler. You need to find your moments. Dominant scorer in the front court and all that jazz. So because you mentioned it, let's talk a little bit further about this piece you wrote for Bulls Confidential earlier this week, talking about how these 1920 Bulls with these new additions, not only Satoransky, but also Kobe White in the draft, can really maximize their offensive efficiency compared to last season, which was just brutal to watch at times. Essentially, becoming a better, more efficient three-point shooting team, but also hopefully picking up that pace a bit. And we'll see if what Jim Boylan and John Paxson told us is actually going to happen, which is that they're gonna take the brakes off and let these kids play fast. Kobe White in particular, who the Bulls are very excited about his speed. And the team that your collections is a team that you could maybe model the 1920 Bulls after. And I don't know if you were talking to Michael Reinsdorf recently, because I'm pretty sure in one of his interviews, he highlighted the Sacramento Kings as, well, look at what the Kings are doing, you know, like our rebuild, like we can see some signs of improvement coming. Just look at what the Kings have done. Talk to me a little bit more about that comparison and what you want ideally to see this Bulls team do as far as it comes to stylistically on the offensive end.
Yeah. And so, and I just want to give a quick shout out to Michael Reinsdorf. You know, us Michaels, great minds that think alike. So I think me and him, we might have just been sending the brainwaves to each other telepathically there.
Right. I assume you're also a very big fan of Jerry West.
Huge fan. Huge. But in all seriousness, yeah, the Kings are a good style to try to model there after. It starts basically with, first, when just looking at the two teams, I think De'Aaron Fox, a lot of people didn't expect him to be a franchise caliber star the way he's sort of slowly developing towards that. And I think Lauri Markkanen has a lot of those same parallels, where more so because of how much we didn't know about him as a prospect, but we didn't expect him to maybe be a franchise caliber star, and obviously not there yet, but he looks like he's on the path to becoming that. So that's where the similarity started for me. But when I look at it deeper, the Sacramento Kings won 39 games last year, which, lofty goal for the Bulls. I more think a top end for them this year would be like 36 wins if they were absolutely like everything went right. But the bigger point here is the Kings got 18% of their points off of the fast break last season. That was first in the league. Their offensive rating was about a 110, somewhere around 17th in the league. So they were close to a league average offense just by pushing in transition so much. And I believe off the top of my head, those are for NBA.com, but I believe they were the worst team in the half court. So my bigger point here is the Kings basically de-emphasized the half court offense and just ran every single chance they got. Even sometimes, if you watch them on League Pass, they were just running off a make. When the opponent made a shot, they would just get the ball to their basket, push it down your throat, take a shot, 18 seconds left on the clock. The Bulls actually weren't that far behind. You know, I mean, they were 16th in the league in fast break, percentage of points coming off of fast break. So basically, I think they need to up that. Something that was very interesting, if you look at the shot clock data, the Bulls actually did shoot a higher three-point percentage the earlier they were in the shot clock. There can be a little bit of noise to that information, but basically, if you look at the traditional early part of the shot clock, which is about 18 to 15 seconds left, the Bulls are hitting around 39% there, and I believe that number keeps dropping, and it goes to around 27% when you get to late in the shot clock. So you'll see that with most teams, because obviously, when you get late in the shot clock, you're talking about heaves or, you know, last-second shots where they're not looking at the clock. But the Bulls rarely got into opportunities where you're looking at Zach attacking early, and I want to see
I feel like a lot of those are Antonio Blakeney dribbling for 20 seconds and then jacking. I mean, that's got to be a certain percentage of that, right?
There, a lot of those are Antonio Blakeney and a lot of Jakar Sampson 18-footers late in the season in isolation. So the Bulls were fifth in the league in three-point percentage when you're talking about shots early in the shot clock. So, obviously, they were not a top-five three-point shooting team overall just in that situation. So, I think they need to create more of those situations. And another thing that I mentioned that's very important is Zach LaVine's assist rate. It didn't get a lot of mention from people last year. Actually, shout-out to the Bulls outsiders. Obviously, you guys sat through 82 games of Bulls basketball, so you talked about it. But Zach LaVine did become a better passer last year, and a 22.5 assist rate was nothing to sneeze at. Zach's assist rate was in 94th percentile among wings using cleaningtheglass.com. And so basically he was elite when it came to playmaking from the wing position. It's just he wasn't elite when it came to overall decision making. So as we see Zach cut down the turnovers, he's going to become a more efficient player. And it would seem sort of like the inverse to people that increasing the pace, obviously you're going to see a skyrocketed number of turnovers from Zach. But I think it's just the opposite. I think if you let them run, you're going to see Zach make more simple reads. The half-court offense is where things kind of bog down for Chicago because, again, we don't really have, I don't believe at least, a concrete system in place after the Fred Hoiberg departure, you know, was so quick. It seemed like we were still running pieces of Fred's system, so maybe now we'll see if that looks a little bit different this year. But it's a few clips that I have that I put on my YouTube channel that are in my piece on Bulls Confidential where when Zach is able to sort of flow straight into either a Lauri Markkanen pick and roll at the top of the key off of the fast break or go straight into attacking the paint, he is always looking to see if Lori's open, sort of if he can draw that big man into the paint. For some reason, Zach doesn't look to draw that big man in addition to Lauri in the half court, it seems like. It seems like only in transition when his thinking process is sped up is he sort of naturally looking for the shooter. So I think you almost want Zach LaVine to become your point guard without him knowing it in a weird way.
Right. Well, and we saw when they played that high screen two-man game, Zach and Lowry last season, they didn't do it all that often, but it worked like 80% of the time. Exactly. We were sitting there in the green room at NBC screaming, why are you not doing more of this? So
yeah,
hopefully – and. Yeah, we could use a lot more. And, you know, the Bulls, they brought in Chris Fleming to add to Boylan's staff. I'm hoping that that will have a positive impact on actually finally modernizing this team's offense a little bit for the NBA. And another piece that they added who can hopefully continue to improve upon this team's woeful rankings when it comes to three-point efficiency in the NBA is Tuesday evening's edition of Luke Kornet, which made me laugh because, like Thomas Satoransky, Luke Kornet is a dude who burned the Bulls in a game last season. And I feel like that's got to be a big piece of their scouting when they're looking at free agents. It's like, all right, who kicked our ass last year? Let's go sign those guys. Because Satoransky had a big game against the Bulls. And then Luke Kornet in April, when the season was winding down and the Bulls and Knicks were just throwing garbage out there, had a game where he dropped 24 on the Bulls, on five, including 5 of 7 from downtown. He also had a number of blocks in that game. And those are the two strengths to Luke Kornet's game. Hitting threes as a gigantic 7-1 stretch four. And also, maybe not the most versatile defender, but he's going to get you a lot of block shots at the rim, which this Bulls team could certainly use. What's your thoughts on the Bulls adding Kornet?
Well, my first thought of the Bulls adding Kornet, Matt, is a feeling of intense sadness, because when I saw that we signed another center, I said, so is this ruling out Felicio minutes completely next season? That was my first concern. Is there doesn't seem to be many Felicio minutes left on the table there.
That makes you sad just because it means we will have fewer opportunities to laugh next season?
It does mean we will have fewer opportunities. I won't go that far, but I will say to see Felicio develop, Matt. We won't have the opportunities to see Felicio develop.
fair enough.
I love the Kornet signing, just because, as you said, I mean, on a base level, what people need to know about him is that he is the rare prospect that can actually hit three-point shots at the NBA level and protect the rim at the NBA level. So that's where it starts. I am interested to see if Luke Kornet is in the plans to actually be in the rotation next year. I'm not sure if I've ever seen him really play much power forward, so you know, him next to Markkanen could be actually an interesting lineup, because you have two bigs who can space the floor. I think that's something that they might be looking at as a change of pace, because obviously Daniel Gafford, the rookie big man out of Arkansas, doesn't provide that three-point shooting element. He's a rim runner. So now the Bulls, I like the big man rotation they have, to where you can get out there, and depending on what Wendell Carter turns into three-point shooting-wise, you can always have two bigs on the floor that can space it a little bit. My favorite thing with Luke Kornet, and again, I'm obsessed with the statistics, much like cleaning the glass, get those around garbage time, so that's usually what I'm referring to when I use stats there. But Luke Kornet was 48% last year on corner threes. Now, he only had 27 attempts, so small sample size, but he was absolutely on fire on corner three-point shots. And obviously, again, you're not going to see a lot of 7'1" players you could stick on the weak side as you run a pick-and-roll.
Right.
So I just like that idea, because I want the Bulls offense to really also play like the Brooklyn Nets last year, which is a lot of pick and roll offense heavily featured around the guard. And that's the reason that I think Kornet's really going to help, because when you have Satoransky, for instance, running a pick and pop with Kornet, again, you're just going to have lineups where the Bulls will actually have 5 3-point shooters on the floor. And last year, I'm not sure if there's a time where we ever had more than 3 3-point shooters on the floor all together. No. So I'm very excited to see some modern floor spacing. And the quick thing here, it has to do with Kornet, but also Satoransky, Thad Young, all the signings and pickups in general. Besides Kobe White, pretty much all the players the Bulls added are guys who have historically low usage rates, and they sort of just want to fit in. And I think it's finally smart that the Bulls said, hey, how about we look at what we have on our roster here? Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen are going to be high usage players throughout their career. We're going to surround them with guys who don't need a lot of usage rate. Last season, you know, Jabari Parker, great player, love the guy. But, yeah, I know, it's still fresh. The wound is fresh. But Jabari Parker, for all of Jabari Parker's flaws, we know regardless of whether or not he's good for you, he's going to be a high usage player. So it
very
didn't
much
make
so
sense to add him. It made no sense. And with Satoransky, Thad Young, Luke Kornet, Gafford to a lesser extent, Kobe, I think we're seeing the Bulls put players around LaVine and Markkanen who can put them in a position to succeed. You know, pretty much the gist of my story I wrote for Bulls Confidential is that we're putting players around them now to put them in a position to succeed. Now we need to run a system that puts them in a position to succeed.
Right. I think that is, in a nutshell, exactly what these offseason moves are about, and why those who, as you said earlier, read between the lines a little bit and are looking at this through a microscope, understand why they are good signings and why they're getting praised, not just from people here in Bulls Nation, but national NBA, you know, people around the league who are looking and saying, you know, the Bulls are quietly having a pretty good offseason with these moves, because guess what? They make sense. Now, yes. Whether or not you believe that the young core of Lowry, Zach, and Wendell have enough of a high ceiling to actually be the best pieces on a team that grows into contending is one thing. And maybe they don't. But what we do know is that the Bulls believe that they can be and are planning to build around that. So they actually, this summer so far, are building around that with complementary pieces,
yeah.
Which is a refreshing change of pace for a front office that has made a lot of head-scratching moves when it comes to building an NBA roster in recent history. We're talking with my guy, Michael Walton, of NBC Sports Chicago and also Bulls Confidential here on Locked On Bulls. Follow him on Twitter, @ZenMasterMike. All right, Michael, let's get to the final transaction the Bulls have made in the first 72 or so hours of free agency, and that is rewarding the hard-working, grit, grind, toughness, Bulls across the chest, Mr. Archie himself, on a 3-year, $9 million deal using that bird rights extension that the Bulls had. I mean, to me, it makes sense and was not at all surprising when you hear everything that that organization has said about Archie Diacono since coming into training camp with no guarantees making the roster last season and the fact that he played 81 games this past season. Your thoughts on the Bulls keeping Archie around and rewarding him? Because especially to me, when they put a giant dent in his minutes at the back end of last season to prevent him from getting a bonus that was coming his way was such a low yeah. ball move. Like, I was like, come on, guys. That, like, this guy's getting his ass kicked out there for you every night, and you're killing his minutes subtly at the end of the season to prevent from paying him. But they reward him ultimately with this contract. Your thoughts on keeping Archie around?
Yeah, first of all, I just want to mention that storyline when I found that out about the minutes threshold for him literally broke my heart. So I am very excited. First, like you said, we did right by Archie and sort of got him his money. 3 years, $9 million, obviously very fair deal. I'm excited for it. I like it just because I did want Archie to be back. It's point guard insurance first, obviously, in case anyone gets hurt. But my main reason for liking Archie Diacono is actually the same reason I like Sad Ransky so much next to Levine, and it's his assist rate compared to his usage rate. I believe last year Archie Diacono had somewhere around 14% usage rate and around 19% assist rate, which any player that is having that much of a difference between his assist rate and usage rate, the point of that is Archie's always looking to pass first, and simply put, the Bull can use anyone in that second guard position next to Zach, just looking to pass first. And that's not a knock on Zach, it's just because they can help Zach do what he does best and just focus on getting buckets. I like the signing. Archie doesn't turn the ball over. I was pleasantly surprised by his three-point shooting because I've always thought he was a good shooter. I just didn't think at the NBA level he would ever be able to really get his shot off against, you know, NBA-level athleticism, but 37% last year. So I love Archie Diacono, even though I will say, as I said with Felicio, I think this has to obviously be the writing on the wall for a Chris Dunn trade, correct?
Right. Yeah, that was my next thought, is most people looking at this Archie extension and saying, all right, well, if Chris Dunn wasn't gone before, it almost guarantees that he's gone now. The Bulls repeatedly saying we haven't given up on Chris Dunn, after not so subtly implying that they've given up on Chris Dunn. Every time Paxton opens his mouth over the last several months, it is Chris Dunn is an afterthought. Oh, but by the way, we haven't given up on Chris Dunn. There was some SI NBA reporter sometime earlier this week who mentioned that the Bulls are shopping him. I haven't gotten that verified from anybody else within local Bulls media, but to me, it does make sense when you think about it. And now, especially with Archie sticking around, drafting Coby White, adding Satoransky, and the fact that, look, Zach LaVine's coming off a season where if he were not on a 22-win team, he had borderline all-star numbers. Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine had no chemistry whatsoever. And when you're talking about whether it's Satoransky or Archie Diacono, being a guy who can have a low usage percentage and a high assist percentage playing in the backcourt with Zach LaVine, that's what this team needs. And Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine were a less good version of Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade going, I go, you go, I go, you go. Like, so if you recognize that that didn't work and your roster is full, you have an up-and-coming, exciting, fast young point guard, Coby White, who you want to get minutes as a rookie, and you have Thomas Satoransky to now run that first unit offensively, basically as a pass first, second, and third kind of guy, to me, I think both sides should recognize that this is it for Chris Dunn. They loved him coming out of Providence. They wanted him so badly in the 2016 draft that they nearly traded Jimmy to get him. And then they targeted him again after the fact, getting him as a primary piece of the Jimmy Butler trade a year later with Minnesota. They clearly loved this kid. But whether it's just his inability to stay on the court or the fact that he didn't fit with the other pieces that they have, it didn't work. Their obsession with Chris Dunn didn't turn out to be as flowery as they wanted it to. And I think they have to face the music. And I think, honestly, also Chris Dunn is probably a kid who is sick of hearing all of this slander and hearing his name mentioned as an afterthought or as a guy who they say has to be better and would probably benefit from a fresh start somewhere else.
Yeah, and especially when, you know, you're on a 22-win team, obviously it's tough to put the blame on one person or even three people. When you're that bad, it's sort of obviously the blame should permeate throughout the entire organization there. I think Dunn is still, like you said, a good player. I think he actually might have more value playing the two-guard spot, sort of in a backup role where he can guard an opposing team's primary scorer and sort of worry about less of the playmaking duty. I don't want to say the Bulls did a disservice to Dunn because that's going too far. You know, Dunn did have to go up there and prove it. But I do think there are ways in which we could have maximized his skills a little bit more. I think once you see that, obviously, the guy seems like he's just never going to develop into a three-point shooter, I think they should have went to more guard post-ups to where you have Chris Dunn posting up a smaller, you know, man. We did see them go to that in stretches, but we never saw them really commit to trying to get Chris Dunn going on a low block or look for other creative ways to get him going. So I agree with you completely, Matt, that he needs a fresh start. What disappoints me is, as you said, I think the Bulls front office was a little bit too transparent in how disappointed they were with the season. And obviously, you know, I don't work in the NBA, so I don't know how much this actually matters. But I feel like whatever market there is for Chris Dunn definitely takes a hit when you publicly talk about how much he hasn't developed. So,
right.
Again, yeah. it could not matter. They could already know what deals would be in place. But just from a public PR standpoint, I wouldn't have went so hard on Chris Dunn publicly because I think I've heard you mention before, if we're lucky, it seems like the Bulls will get a second-round pick from this deal. Where I legitimately think if you didn't say anything or if you had been hyping up Chris Dunn the whole time, I don't think it's insane to get 2 second-round picks, which is a little bit more in terms of flexibility. We just saw Justin Holiday go for 2 second-rounders. So
right.
I think it's going to hurt when we actually go to trade him.
They weren't undercutting Justin Holiday's value at every turn while they were trying to trade him.
Exactly. So it's a little Bulls. Bit different there.
They're starting to do some things right, but some things are still just so facepalmy. All right, so before I let you go, Michael, just wanted to get a couple of your thoughts about some of the other big movers and shakers across the NBA and free agency. Obviously, the biggest dominoes being a Kevin Durant and Kyrie team up in Brooklyn. And, you know, they're going to be without Kevin Durant for the first season of that, but still a massive, massive win for them. You had Al Horford, joining the Sixers in an interesting retool. Jimmy going to Miami in a sign-in trade that was just so strange and had so many moving pieces and is such a Jimmy Butler move. The Celtics getting Kemba and sending Terry Rozier to Charlotte. Just so much crazy shit going on. I'm wondering, like, what was your big move that I think that you think helped the team that is trying to contend next season, and maybe one of your more underappreciated low key good moves that was not a guy who's a big name star, but who's going to help a contender a lot?
Ooh, that's interesting. So obviously, I just quick shout out as a Duke homer for a long time here, I'll go ahead and give Kyrie a little love. The Kyrie KD wasn't shocking because I feel like we had that one ruined so early in the night. I do think Kyrie Irving's perfect for Brooklyn's offense, so I'm excited to see that. But my favorite move of the night, sort of, you know, just total all the moves that I've seen, D'Angelo Russell signed a trade to Golden State. I was very pleased with that from Golden State. And I think when you're losing a player of Kevin Durant's caliber and you're able to retool like that, I'm not even sure how Russell's really going to work there. Like, I know he'll fit in the offense they run. I've heard so many rumors already about them looking to flip him. But either way, I thought it was amazing to get D'Angelo Russell after losing out on KD. And I like D'Angelo Russell playing a diet Klay Thompson role next to Steph until Klay can get back. So that was my favorite obvious big signing. I think my favorite under-the-radar move, I feel bad because this one I think isn't as original either. Some other people probably have said this. But Bojan Bogdanović signed in Utah with the Jazz.
That Utah team's going to be fun and dangerous.
They're going to be really good because I think they really just attacked the only weakness they have, which is, you know, if Gobert is going to be out there, you're going to need a legit knockdown three-point shooter in all four of those spots around him. And now they have that. You can throw out those lineups where you got Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley. You know, you got different shooters and combinations you can put out there. And when you take Gobert off the floor, you can put five wings out there who can shoot and run an up-tempo style that we haven't seen Utah really try yet. So I just think that signing, getting Bogdanović for them, gave them a lot of versatility. And I was very, very excited with it. As far as moves, just really quickly, I wasn't as high on. Al Horford on Philly, I like, but I wasn't as crazy about it just because I really think losing Jimmy Butler is going to be a huge blow to them.
Yeah. And look, I mean, it was a second option kind of move for them, as was throwing all that money at Tobias Harris, which, in my opinion, Tobias Harris is a good player, but he is not worth that contract, not even close.
No.
But you know, contrary to the first reports that were creeping out, it sounded like they did offer Jimmy the Supermax to stay, and he turned him down. So if you know you're losing Jimmy, you got to do something. So they throw a bunch of money at Tobias Harris to keep him and then bring in Horford as, you know, a savvy vet. And honestly, one of the guys who presented the Sixers, you know, with some problems instead, you know, of Al Horford and his Celtics causing you problems as a potential playoff matchup, you just get Al Horford and steal him away from Boston. So to me, in that sense, it's a savvy move, but it's also a guy 33, 34 years. Yeah. I mean, it is a nice insurance plan if Embiid were to get hurt. And sometimes, you know, you might see them play Embiid and Horford on the court together. In fact, I would expect it. You see that out of the gates. But because the Sixers did some interesting stuff, you know, we're talking about the Celtics getting Kemba, the Nets. You're a fan of them with Kyrie leading the show, even without Kevin Durant. They'll probably. With all of those great role players over there, you know, Harris, LeVert, our old pal Dinwiddie, they certainly look like they could be a playoff team. I'm wondering, and again, so as we're recording this, Kawhi has yet to commit. And obviously, I think most would agree if Kawhi stays in Toronto that the Raptors and defending champs are the odds-on favorites to win the East. Let's just say Kawhi leaves. How do you see the balance of power shaking out in the Eastern Conference, like top four? And do you think that the Bulls will be in play for 7 and 8?
If Kawhi leaves the East, which is just my little prediction, I 100% expect him to leave the East at this point.
Me too.
I think, sadly. But I think the balance is going to be a little weird just because, again, with obviously KD being out, I don't think Brooklyn's a crazy effective team. I think they probably are, you know, just a step below even maybe what Boston was last year with Kyrie because of the Horford situation there. So I would definitely just throw off the top of my head, Brooklyn's going to be in that mix still. Milwaukee's going to be in that mix. I think you could even throw Indiana in there with all the improvements they made and pending Oladipo comes back healthy. So after I look at the top four or five, because again, Toronto is going to be in there at some capacity. If Kawhi leaves the East, it's so wide open. I do think the Bulls can make a playoff push if they really want to. And again, as I said, I stay away from every year making any crazy bold predictions. Like the Bulls are going to win 45 games. But like I said, exactly. I don't want to be laughed at too hard there. But as I said, the Bulls last year, I believe they were, let me look it up here. They were 20th in the league in pace. And they had that stretch where they went 7-5. I believe that was from early February to about early March. And so over that stretch where the Bulls went 7-5, they had a pace of 100.9, which was 19th in the league. Basically, a possession or two faster than where they were usually throughout the season. So the evidence showed that when the Bulls picked it up a little bit, they were able to be a team that could beat two games above 500, and you wouldn't be shocked by it. So I do think Chris Fleming and the rest of this new look coaching staff is going to help the offense really speed up. And I think, like I said, best case scenario, but it's what I'm predicting. I think the Bulls will win 36 games. And with the 36 games, I think that gets you really into more of a 9-10 seed range. So that's why I said I can see the Bulls fighting for a playoff spot. I'm not really predicting they make it, but I think they can get 36 wins on a 9 seed. And I'm okay with that realistically. You know, I want them to make the playoffs, but winning anywhere in the 30s after last year would be a huge, huge improvement.
Like, you're talking about 35 or 36, which would still be a 13 or 14 win improvement, which is nothing.
It would be a huge leap,
Nothing to sneeze at. I know the super optimists out there would say, well, yeah, but like 22 isn't even a fair number when you think about the rotations that they were using last season, which, okay, fair point, but still. A 14-win jump is a huge jump. It doesn't happen all that often.
Exactly.
All right. So, Mike, appreciate your time, man. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you. Before I let you go, do the Bulls have an all-star on the roster when all-star festivities are happening in Chicago in 2020?
Yes. I, without a doubt, 100% believe the Bulls have at least one all-star. And if people want predictions off the top of my head, I would say, and no shock here, I would say Zach LaVine will be the Bulls' one all-star. There will be tons of people nationally who complain that Zach LaVine does not deserve to be an all-star. It's just like D'Angelo Russell last year. He's only getting it because the game's in Chicago. Some or none of those things may or may not be true, but all I'm saying is that next year I do think Zach LaVine is going to put up somewhere in the range of, let's say, 24-5-5. I think he can be a 24-5-5 guy. And I really think the five assists are more important than the point totals for him because that shows a little bit of growth playmaking. But if Zach can legitimately, like I said, 24 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and most important, the Bulls can actually start to win some games, I don't think it's out of the question that Zach will be an all-star next year.
I love it. He's Michael Walton, content producer and writer, covering the Bulls at NBC Sports Chicago, and also editor-in-chief over there at that Bulls blog, Bulls Confidential. Follow that on Twitter at Bulls Conf, C-O-N-F. Follow him on Twitter at Zen Master Mike. Always a great follow on Twitter. Great Bulls content everywhere. And as I said, definitely check out that piece he wrote earlier this week about the Bulls and what they could do to be a not-so-laughable offense next season. Michael, appreciate you coming by the pod, man. It was an awesome conversation. We'll definitely get you on again sometime down the road, and enjoy the 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Matt. Can't wait to be back again, and same to you.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com